Beginning with the Bismillah, this is the Dean Show Radio Show, my brother.
My brother!
And you've tuned in to another episode of the Dean Show Radio Show, and we're going to get right to it with my next guest, all the way from UK, used to be, stills Irish, was born in the UK, but used to be a practicing Catholic, if I'm correct, or used to belong to Confused.com, and now he's passed all the confusion, and he's going to tell us his story on how he came to Islam. My brother, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you? May the peace and mercy and blessings of the creator of the heavens and the earth, Allah, be upon you.
Ameen. Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. May also the peace and mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala be upon you as well, Eddie.
Thank you for finding the time to be with us on the Dean Show Radio Show.
Yeah, that's no problem. It's a pleasure.
Now, should we start with Confused.com first, or should we start with you being born into a Catholic family? Where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, I was born into the Catholic family, so we should start there.
All right.
I mean, when I was very young, I was the age of four. My Irish father, he ran out of the house, well, courtesy of my mother's boot, really, to be honest.
Yes.
So unfortunately, what had happened there was that mother and father didn't really get on. My father used to drink very heavily, so he was almost an alcoholic. So at the age of four, they separated. So that was my first sort of key memory. I can only remember one thing about my father. In fact, they reminded me of it later on. My father reminded me of it when I met him 20 years later. And I told him, my mom doesn't really like you, so you better leave at the age of four. That was the last time, that was the last time I spoke to him at the age of four, you know.
Yes.
So there I was. I was a member of this family. My father had gone. My mother took over, single parent family with my other two sisters. And then she remarried. She remarried my stepfather, and my stepfather and I didn't get on very well. And he used to give me good beatings and stuff like that. So that wasn't so pleasant. Basically, in this family, there was no real spiritual guidance whatsoever. My mother hated Roman Catholicism as a result of the fact that she'd been a member of a convent, and she'd been beaten up by the and harassed by the sisters there.
When you say a convent, what do you mean?
Right, a convent is basically a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So she was in the Catholic school.
What age was this?
Well, she would have been when I was. Of course, I wasn't even thought of at that time when she was at school. But she was she was about 12 to 16. She went to the Catholic school.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, it went on. I remember going to school. One of the things that the first sort of thing that which became obvious to me was I felt different. I just felt different. I saw all these kids doing stuff without asking questions, but I always asked so many questions, even in the primary school. That's the first school. That's when you're about from four until about 11. I was in the infant school, and I remember I was the only kid who'd never read a book and didn't want to read a book. Mm-hmm. And there were some kids who had read the whole bookshelf. And I took the great accolade of having read none of the books, and they'd read all of them. One of them had read all of them. So
yes.
I always felt a little bit different. I felt a bit left out. But I always remember not wanting to do something I didn't understand. So they'd ask me, read this junk, Peter and Jane books, Jack went up the hill and Jane followed after us and stuff like that. And to be honest, it just did not make a great deal of sense to me why I was being asked to read this book when there was no purpose behind reading this book.
Was this connected? Was this connected with religion at all? These kind of books?
No. Most of the stuff is just completely secular. And although there was a Christian message given out in the school assemblies. I remember they used to talk about Moses, and they used to talk about Abraham and Jesus, but there was no real belief system as such. It was a sort of not irreligious or non-religious school.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you know, I spent a long time trying to find myself even as a young kid. And I remember they put me in kids with a deficiency class. So what we used to call they used to call me the dunce, you know, the dunce of the school. Mm-hmm. And we used to be in this class where we had to get extra tuition and extra support.
Yes.
Anyway, what I did was one thing that really happened to me, which is really important, is that towards the end of the last year, a guy called David said to me, "Why don't you learn chess?" Because he could see that I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't really interested in anything. Anyway, mm-hmm. So he taught me this game, chess. And, you know, you got to remember, and the backdrop is that I'm in this Mrs. Dilly's class, which is the guys who've got maybe some mental problems or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then he's teaching me this game of chess. Anyway, cut a long story short, he taught me, and I managed to get to the final of the championship final mm-hmm. in the school. So then I was actually playing him in the final, so I let him win. So I remember the headmaster trying to give me this medal on stage, and he did a double take on me, and he nearly fainted. So, wow. Why the hell is this guy, you know, this, as my name was then, Tim Chambers, you know, able to win chess, but he can't read a book and stuff like that. So, I mean, that was the first time that really it started. I thought myself as being very different. I didn't want to do anything without any particular reason. If somebody told me a reason and taught me a reason, I think I would have done those things, you know, because if I was taught that education is important because when you're educated, you can read about, you know, your purpose.
Yes.
Then I probably would have read those books, but didn't make much sense to me at the time, you know.
So were you doing things, you mentioned that your mother had hated because she had a bad experience with the Catholic school. So in your house, nothing about religion, about Jesus, about God, about Mary, any of these things, even though she hated the Catholic school or the church, did she teach you anything about religion?
No, not really. In fact, God was never mentioned in the house from the time I was born until the time I left at the age of 15. God or Allah or spirituality or Jesus or Mary, none of that stuff was ever mentioned.
How about nationalism? Are Irish really, they hold on to the roots, you know, when the Irish Day parade comes, you put the green on and you had the flute and, or what's that? The big, what's that thing called?
They got the flute.
The flute. That's what it is.
Yeah. Flutes and violins, and they got the whole instrumentation out there, and the green outfits.
Are Irish really heavy drinkers?
To be honest, the Irish, the new up and coming Irish, maybe they're not, but the ones that came over to the UK in search of they were economic migrants, obviously from Ireland.
Yes,
like my father. They came and they reconstructed Britain after the Second World War. So they had a pretty tough life. They were just out on the roads, digging roads up, building and building more. And, you know, the only way that I think that they could really, you know, continue doing that was to lose themselves every night and just wake up in the morning and continue their work. So that was a bit like what my father was. He was completely illiterate. He couldn't read or write, and he was basically he had a fight with his father at the age of 15.
Yes.
And I remember him telling me that afterwards that my father, you know, he broke up my new racing bike, and I had a fight with him, and I left. And that was the age of 15. That's when he came to England. But he and my mother, they married very early. You know, they married very early, and at the age of 17, that's when they had their first child. So you can imagine at the age of 17, my mother was, you know, so it was a very, it was a turbulent time, you know, the old immigrants coming to the UK, and with my mother, she was brought up in a middle class, you know, English, you know, white, you know, family. And what she did was almost disgraceful for the family, you know. She mm-hmm. married this Irish illiterate immigrant, you know. So yeah. It was, you know, alhamdulillah, you know, Allah has put us, you know, given us some hidayah. After all of that, he's enabled us to see the truth and see the purpose after all of that.
Tell us now, is it primarily in Ireland, amongst the Irish community, is that the primary way of life, religion, Catholicism?
Yeah, I mean, it is Roman Catholicism, although there's a massive influx now of American New Age churches coming into places like Dublin and setting out their stalls. So that is actually becoming very popular now. I don't know what the statistics are, but It must be in favor of Catholicism still, because that's the main staple religion, if you like, of the country. But certainly there are changes afoot.
Now tell us, we got past the early stages of your life, not much religion, not much God in the mix. Now you're coming to a point in your life, you're getting older. Did you just start doing the normal thing, what young boys do, maybe chasing the girls, maybe going to the nightclubs, maybe hanging around at different social events, trying to, you know, not look for trouble, but you end up in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, peer pressure is on you, and, you know, you're sort of led to do certain things that, even though you don't want to do those things.
Peer pressure, it's
just the peer pressure, yeah. And I remember, you know, meeting people and them saying, "Come down to the pub, let's get drunk and stuff like that."
Oh, not looking for trouble, but you find up yourself in trouble, huh? That's the call.
Right, yeah. That's it. So I wasn't looking for trouble, and I didn't think that was a natural way, but I guess everybody else is doing it.
Peer
so
pressure.
You think, well,
yeah.
Peer pressure, and but to break away from that is the big challenge, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to the guys that were taking me, "Look, I'm not going to drink tonight. You drink, I'll just drink orange juices and sit by and watch you guys."
Yes.
And I remember, you know, thinking how dumb these people looked after when I was drinking orange juice and sitting amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the rubbish they were talking, the way they were acting. I used to feel ashamed, actually, to be in the presence of the people, to be honest. You know, and I used to think, my God, if that I look like that, I should just be ashamed of myself.
Wow! Know? So you saw both effects, the before and the after.
Yeah, yeah, I saw before and after a lot, and you know, don't forget, I'd left home when I was 15 as well. So even though I'd never met my father, well, it was only until I was about 24 when I met my father the second time, 20 years after he left.
Yes.
But I'd done exactly the same thing. You know, it was cyclical. I'd left my home at the age of 15 as well. Yeah, but, you know, subhanAllah, I mean, going back to the story, you know, and looking at the situation with the guys I was hanging out with, I spent a lot of time with one particular guy over 8 years. And he saw the way I would change. I would go through fluxes. I mean, I would come back, you know, and I'd be practicing Buddhism one day. And then the next day I'd be reading Dostoevsky, and the next day Gandhi. You know, so he saw me coming back on a weekend basis. And he would be just chasing the girls and getting drunk and listening to music, loud music. And I used to go back, and I used to be in a different frame of mind every day. So he got up, and towards the end, you know, he said to me, you know, I can really try and help you, and I can recommend a good psychiatric doctor for you to go and see, because there's something not right about you. You're different.
But if you would have
answered,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go on. I answered him. I just said, well, maybe you guys are different and I'm not. You know, maybe I'm thinking and you guys are not.
What was his main ambition and goal in life? What was he trying to accomplish?
Well, he considered that he was young and that he had the whole world in front of him and that he just wanted to get off with as many girls and score as many drugs and listen to music.
That's kind of normal in today's society among the youth.
Excuse me.
Now,
yes, it is.
Now, since that's normal and many people fall for, as we said, the peer pressure, what were your ambitions and goals? And did you feel like an outcast because you weren't going, it seems like you weren't peer pressured into some of these things?
Yeah, well, I tried to find people that were like me, that wanted to question, that wanted to delve into the mysteries of the world, of the universe, etc. I couldn't find any people. I really, really tried. And my ambition was to find out what on earth I was doing in the planet first and foremost. If I wasn't going to find out why I'd been put in this planet, then I wasn't content just to waste time getting drunk and sitting with girls that I didn't really even want to sit with, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, I just wanted to find out, who is this Yusuf Chambers? Who is Tim Chambers, as I was, alias Tim Chambers, before I embarked on a mission to sit with people, you know, I needed to have a meaning. And yeah. I remember feeling very frustrated. You know, I'd walk in the streets and I'd meet people and you could see the real them was dying to get out, you know, and that was me. I was being the real me. And they didn't like what they saw because that disturbed their enjoyment, you know, that their pattern of enjoyment, their so-called enjoyment, because, you know, as people know, you know, when you get drunk, the enjoyment is fleeting. It might be for 30 seconds you feel a high, and then, you know, you meet a girl and maybe you're with her for 30 seconds you feel a high, you know, but at the end of the day, I wasn't content. I said, if that is what the world is about, this world is a joke, you know. I said, for 30 seconds, I can, out of 24 hours, I can have fun. No way. There can't. There must be more to it than that. You know, so then yes. I started reading a lot of astronomy. I was reading a lot about astronomy. And it was only after I read the Quran, a long time after, I realized the significance of what I was doing. I was looking into the night sky, gazing into the night sky, and I would look at the distances. I was reading about the distances between the heavenly bodies, between the nearest star and planet Earth, you know, 4 light years away, traveling at the speed of light for 4 years. That's how long it takes light to get from your eye to the nearest star. And I was shocked. In fact, I was frightened. I was really petrified by this. I said, there's no way that we can be here and have those big distances. And we're talking about the Milky Way being billions and billions of light years away. The nearest star is only 4 light years away. So I was thinking and I was frightened. I was so petrified and I was looking for people to explain it to me. So then I remember looking out at the night sky oftentimes after I'd read all the astronomical figures, and I would just cry. I would just be crying. You know, I feel all alone, isolated. And I'm sure there's many people out there like that, Eddie. Right now, as we're conducting the show, there's so many people doing the same stuff.
Yes, yes. Mm. So now, is this where you were in the point of your life where it was confused, Tim? Where you were just confused? You mentioned Buddhism. At that point, did you see that this wasn't the way? Then did you go through some of these other ways, and at what point, how deeply did you get rooted in them before you saw, like, you know what, something's missing here, I need to move on to the next?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started off reading an awful lot, reading and reading and reading, and consider that I've been a guy for 15 years, I didn't read anything, you know.
Yes.
I didn't read anything at all. But then when I wanted to find out who I was, I knew that I had to read. Because there was a purpose to the reading. So I read and read and read. Anything anyone would give me, And I started off with the astronomical books, and then I started off with Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, you know, these famous Russian authors. And I was reading War and Peace. I was reading books that people probably never read, and with the, even after they got PhDs and God knows what. And, you know, so I've done a full swing, you know. And I got so much into this, the reading, that I started to read the Tolstoy was the person who influenced me to start looking at organized religions, because he's got one piece called A Critique of Dogmatic Theology.
Yes.
A Critique of Dogmatic Theology. So he's talking about these organized religions are just religion. They're for religious purposes. They're just for the religion that you're following. They're not for you to benefit you. They don't benefit you, you know. So I started reading the Jerusalem Bible. I picked up the Jerusalem Bible, started reading through it. I saw some glimpses of what I thought were the truth in that.
You saw some.
I saw other.
You saw some glimpses. Let's hold right there. We got to take a break. We're talking to Yusuf Chambers, formerly Tim Chambers, here on the Dean Show Radio Show. You don't want to go nowhere. We'll be right back with the rest of this exciting story. Sit tight.
He created the universe. To him belong the heavens and the earth. The ever-living, he is the first. He's the owner of mercy. He sent his messengers to warn his creatures of the grave dangers of worshiping other than Allah. There is none greater than the Creator. None greater than the Creator, Allahu Akbar.
You have to pray as if everything depends on Allah, and it does. But you must work as if everything depends on you, and it doesn't. That's my point. You see what I'm saying? And I don't like that. I don't like us sitting here. What are you waiting for? What are we waiting for right now? What are we waiting for all these people to come to Islam? What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for right now? When they're going to come? They're going to come. Allah going to bring these people. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put in our hand the ability to do it. Now do your job.
And we are back again with Tim. No, it's Yusuf Chambers here on the Dean Show Radio Show. You picked up the Jerusalem Bible and you saw some truth in there, or what appeared to be what you agreed with. And what happened from there? Talk to us, please.
Well, you know, Eddie, you know, at that point, I'd started to say that, look, if I'm going to get the truth from anyone, then because I was living in a Christian country, a Christian white country, most of the people who professed to a religion, they expressed themselves through the Bible. So I picked up the Jerusalem Bible. I bought it home. I started reading. And I just went back to it a couple of times here and there, but I remember, you know, being, interested in the Lord's Prayer, because I remember we used to say the Lord's Prayer in the school, and that was a Christian, prayer, as yeah. It were. So that was what I cottoned on to or got really interested from the Jerusalem Bible. But there were so many collections of thoughts and anecdotes in that book, which it didn't make sense to me. You know, they didn't really make sense to me. So I put that down for a while, but I just kept it on my bookshelf, and I went searching, and I decided, look, I've read enough books now. I'd read the Gita. I'd read parts of the Gita, parts of the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament. I'd read, lots and lots of philosophical books of René Descartes and Tolstoy, Dostoevsky. I read a lot about Gandhi. I read virtually every book that Gandhi ever wrote and anything that anybody wrote about him.
Well, so did you believe at this whole time? Did you have a feeling that there was a higher power? Did you believe in a God? Did you believe in a creator while you were doing this?
I started to realize that obviously all of these different ways were talking about one end, and that was God. That was God. And then I was in search of somebody who could explain and describe God to me in a way which I understood in my heart, you know. So all of these books, they had bits and pieces of what I considered to be the truth from my soul. I looking into my soul and reading that, I think that's the truth, but that stuff doesn't make sense. And that's the truth, and that doesn't make sense. So what I did was picking out from all of them, I decided then to go and try and meet these people. Right, so I'd read the books, but I needed now some practice, if you like.
Yes.
So the first group of people that I stumbled upon was when, first of all, I got really involved in the whole concept of animals, you know, suffering. So I used to think animals are suffering, so I stopped eating animals, and I became vegetarian.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just felt, and I'd read a few things, and I'd read about Gandhi as well. Gandhi was very influential to me, that he was trying to, you know, be peaceful, and that he was peaceful to the animals and the plants and everything, you know. And so I tried this way out, and I got some pleasure out of it. I got some benefits out of it. But then somebody came to me and said, look, if you're a vegetarian, but you really should be a vegan, because you got to protect the plants, and the plants, they proved to me that plants have a soul as well. They feel pain. So I became a vegan as well, which means you can't eat anything from the animal. You can't wear anything from the animal as well. That was quite tough.
Yes.
But unfortunately, that experiment, ended me in having severe constipation for about 3 months.
Wow.
So, I left that way because I realized that, you know, it wasn't benefiting me and it was painful. And I thought if it was painful, it can't be a way of God. So I left that, and then I stumbled into a lot of Buddhists. And one day I was just walking through, and I was talking to a guy, and he said, you know, you should come to our house. He pointed out, we went there, and he taught us meditation, Buddhist meditation.
Mm-hmm.
For about 3 months, I kept going back because it was very peaceful. It was some benefits in it, you see?
Yes.
So we were always looking for something that would benefit the human soul, benefit the body. And, you know, I was a health freak at that point. So I turned off from all forms of alcohol and drugs. I mean, they just didn't turn me on at all. I'd now got into this really hyper state of naturalism and looking after the body.
Yes.
Like treating the body as the temple, you know?
Yes.
So after going through this Buddhist phase, I remember I sat with the guru, you know, and he was actually an English guy like me.
Guru, that's the head hacho?
Yeah, the head hacho, that's right. You know, the imam, if you like. So, I sat down with him and I said to him, look, you know, I really like to thank you because, you know, you benefited me at least physiologically and spiritually with this beautiful meditation you taught me. But I need to ask you a question. And the question really, it's paining me because no one's really tried to explain this to me. And all we've been doing is just falling asleep together. But we need to wake up together now, you know. So I said, well, Why don't you try and answer this question? This is the question. What is the purpose of life? And who am I, and who is God?
Brilliant questions.
Well, because, you know, this is what I was out there for. I mean, at that point, I would just apply to do politics with third world development studies in the School of African and Asian Studies in Sussex University in Brighton. And I made the vow that I'm going to university because I want to find out who I am and how I can be effective in this world.
Yes.
I didn't go there for a piece of paper. And I didn't go there for a job afterwards, you know. So I remember with this guy anyway, and I asked him, I popped the question. And he said to me, after some contemplation, he said, the purpose of life is to contemplate the supreme nothingness. And that was what exactly the way you've taken that phrase is the way I took it, with complete silence.
This obviously didn't hit home with you again.
With you guys. Yeah.
So you had a good time falling asleep together. Now it was time to move on.
I had to move on because as far as I was concerned, if I didn't move on, then I wouldn't have been true to myself.
Tell us, brother Yusuf, we're almost out of time. We want to glimpse through some of the other ways before everyone is excited to know how you came to the true way of life, the way of all the messengers of God. Tell us that now, okay, did you go back to your roots now that you were, your family was kind of born in? Did you go, and if you can talk about that just briefly, did you, because you mentioned the Bible, did you go back to Christianity at all?
Yeah, well, one night I decided, look, I've seen a church across the road from where I lived. I said, I'm going to go in and pop the question to the guy in there. So I knocked on the door and he said, look, I'm a bit busy at the moment. Come back on Monday. I said, I was only going to ask him about the purpose of life. That was all.
Yes.
But anyway, I came back Monday morning. He was busy. He was running around. And he said to me, I said, what's the purpose of life? He said, have you ever thought about doing a theology degree? I said, well, if I did a theology degree, it's going to take me 3 years to find out the purpose of life. Is that what you want me to do? And he said, look, to be honest, I'll be absolutely frank with you. I cannot help you. In other words, he didn't really know the purpose of life himself, but he was actually a member of the cloth. He was a guy who was opening the church and closing it. And he told me, he said, you see the building across the road?
Yeah.
He said, I open it in the morning. I let the people in. And then in the evening, I close it. I let the people out and I close it. That's my job. I can't really help you. I'm really sorry. So I went out, and that was one aspect to the Christian, with me trying to find out what Christianity was about and believing there might be a way to God. The second happening, I know we haven't got much time, so I'm going to go through it very quickly.
Yes.
Second time, I was invited to another Christian worship place, but those are the guys who have the guitars and drums and start singing and
the dance party at the after party.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, basically what I did was I went in and I first of all, I thought they were very nice people. And then the guy came out strutting and playing the guitar. And then he started pointing to people and people started falling prostrate on the floor, shaking. And it freaked me out. So I ran out of the building. I never saw those guys again. And many other things have happened. I visited the Hindu temple, and that really freaked me out. There were things that didn't make sense. And then one day, I was in Sussex University, and I had a girlfriend. And she said to me, tomorrow, please don't come here. And I said, well, what's this all about? She said, it's my religion. And I said, you know what? Your religion must be wrong. Or you're not practicing your religion properly.
Yeah.
So she happened to be a Muslim. So I went to the Islamic Society the morning after. I picked up a load of books. To cut a long story short, I picked up loads and loads of books. And I read the books. I read the books of the Quran, some of the extracts from the Quran, the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. And I read some of the history books of Islam. I read lots and lots of things. In about 2 weeks, I went back to her and I said, look, I'm sorry if I said your religion was wrong. Your religion seems to be very good, but you're just not practicing it properly.
Wow.
And then I said, why didn't you let me know? Why didn't you let me know? We could have got married at least. You see?
Wow, you're telling a Muslim this, what she's supposed to be telling.
Yeah.
the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I said to her that, you know, if you're interested in continuing this relationship, you can get married. She was freaked out. She said, what are you talking about? You think I would ever marry someone like you? Get out of here. So she basically kicked me out. And I remember thinking, I've got to get this girl back, because it was the first time I'd ever fallen in love with a girl.
Yes.
You know, and I never really had girlfriends until that girl. And then she was just, I was besotted by her, you know, but it was like unrequited love, you know.
So yes.
She didn't love me, I loved her. And then towards the end, you know, of the, it was, of course, that month, the day that she started to worship was, of course, the first day of Ramadan. That was what it was. She was fasting, and that day after, I went to the masjid on the first of Ramadan when the shaitan, the devil, is locked up. The big shaitan is locked up.
Yes.
And I'd gone, and I'd Allah had guided me to go to that place through this girl to find all of these books of knowledge. And I've been reading and meeting people for 10 years. 10 years I've been seeking a path to God. And as we know, God says in the glorious Quran, the book of mankind, that if you seek a path unto me, you will find me, you know. And it was through this girl, even though I loved her, even for 2-3 years afterwards, I couldn't get over her. I'd found the purpose. I found the purpose of what I was doing here, and I'd found Allah. I'd found also the teachings of all the prophets, the great prophets, as you mentioned, Abraham, Moses, John the Baptist, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
May Allah have mercy upon them. And of course, we found the Khatam al-Nabi, the seal of the prophet, seal of the prophets, the prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah. Peace and blessings be upon him. And towards the end of Ramadan, I felt incomplete. I was worshipping. I'd started to pray on my own. I was just saying it in English with a little bit of Arabic. And then I started to fast. Now, the fasting for me was the thing which took the blindfold off and allowed me to see the world as it really, really is. Because when you do away with all your food, you do away with your needs, you do away with speaking rubbish on your tongue, and you're just doing it for the sake, purely for the sake of God, you know, which is fasting is always for God, as we know.
Yes.
Yeah. Then you see the world for what it is. And this is what happened to me. I'd seen the world. All the people I was sitting with, I was shocked why I was sitting with them when they didn't know anything themselves. And I really, it was just like an awakening. And in the last few days of Ramadan, I just found a mosque. I was with some really people that were doing some bad stuff, and I wanted to get away from them. So I said, look, let me seek the path to the mosque. Let me go and find a mosque. So I went out and I found the mosque, and I found a congregation of about 300 to 500 people in there. I can't remember the exact number. And I said, look, I need to take the step. I need to get away from this evil out there, and I need to get involved in the good. Show me how to do that. And then they said, well, if you had a bath, and are you clean? Are you ready to do this? And I said, of course, I wouldn't have walked in here otherwise. What do you think I'm in here for?
Yes.
So they said to me, say, Ashadu an la ilaha illallah, wa ashadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah. And of course I did. I repeated that, and I testified there was only one God worthy of worship, and God is on his own. He doesn't have any partners or sons, daughters, or any comparison with his creation. And that the Muhammad is the last messenger.
And that was the key in the door. Tell us, I have a couple more points. I want to get these in before we come to a close for our non-Muslim audience who just saw you go almost around the world looking at all the world religions, and you dipped into this, you dipped into that. So that person doesn't have to go through the whole journey, or they might say, you know what, you just found something that suits you. But basically all religions are the same. What was it about Islam that was so logical, rational, because you were using your brain? You weren't just blindly jumping into something, as we can see from your story. What was it about Islam that had you jump in, and why is it unique, uniquely different from all these different ways?
Okay, I mean, most of the other world religions come into contact with left you to be the decision maker and the judge.
Yes.
They just let you do what you want to do. But what I liked about Islam, there was a direction, and there was a way, and there were rules for everything you do. There is a rule or a direction, and it's all, sealed in many books that we know, which are authentic. And I I'd read about the history of Islam, that it had changed and ruled the world for over around about 800 to 1,000 years, which is the biggest period of time that any world religion has ever ruled the world, which is a big thing in itself. So when I read this, and I saw also that there was a purpose, and it was clearly detailed in the Quran that mankind and jinn has not been created for any other purpose to but to worship the creator, that is God, and that from this that they will attain success and peace in this world and in the hereafter. And by you know, sticking to the rules and sticking to the laws and the judgments of God, then that gave me a sense of comfort and a sense of peace, knowing that there was a God, and that all those distances I was looking at from the stars and the Milky Way, and being, you know, also you know, looking around the world and seeing all the different things I'd see in front of me, suddenly there was an explanation for all of it.
Everything
now,
was
in the other religions. Yep.
Go ahead. And the other religions?
In the other religions, I didn't find that. Unfortunately, I found bits and pieces, but it was very fragmented. But this, it gave me a holistic picture of the life and the world and the world to come, which was even more important. That's what I was frightened about, because I was saying we know there's only one certainty, and that is death.
Death,
the
yes.
only certainty was death. And I was thinking, if I get to that death and I haven't found the purpose, I've failed in the mission. And this Islam gave me, you know, the direction. It gave me the certainty. It gave me all the books of rules. Even though I wasn't a good Muslim for the first 3 years, I'm not even a good Muslim now, but I just wish that I can be amongst those who get raised with Allah and, you know, as a good person. And I wish also that all of humanity will realize that the Quran is their book. It's the book of instruction, the criterion between right and wrong. And it's for them. It's not for Bengalis and Pakistanis and Africans. It is for everyone. It's for every human being. And that's what I realized about Islam.
What advice do you have for those sincere truth seekers? Give them a formula, yes. What they can do to acquire the peace that you have acquired through a long journey, to know that this is indeed a way of life from the Creator, and not some organized religion organized by man, but organized by the one who created them.
I would advise them to look at all the world's religions and see that the difference between Islam, which means to submit to the will of your creator, and the others like Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, etc., all of the others are named after a name of a place or a person. Because the reality is that people worship places and they worship people. Reality is that Islam is to worship your creator, and that's why it's called Islam, and that we are Muslims, because we do that worship, mu Islam. We do the submission to God, and from that we get peace. I would ask all of the brothers and sisters in humanity and all the brothers and sisters in Islam who've left Islam and who are confused and are in a state like I was, confused.com,
yes.
for so many years, I would ask them to cry tonight. Go to bed. Before you go to bed, wash yourself, prepare yourself, be sincere. Be so sincere. And the only way you can show sincerity to God is you've got to cry. If you cry to God in the last third of the night and ask God, guide me to success, guide me to righteousness, guide me to the true path of all the prophets that you sent, guide me to the truth, the haq, as we call it in Arabic, then this is the best thing that I can advise, because I didn't do that because I didn't know how to do that and no one advised me. But I was crying to the stars. I was crying to people. I was crying to things. But if I'd have cried to God, I think Allah may have guided me quicker. And I think if you brothers and sisters are out there and you wish to attain to success in this world and the hereafter, don't make this 10 years suffering that I made for myself. I want you to make it easier for yourself. And we all love each other for the sake of God. And I hope that you do the same and you find truth in your heart.
Beautiful advice. Don't pray for guidance to the stars or crying to the human beings or anything in creation. cry and ask guidance from the one who created the creation. Beautiful advice. Tell us, brother, now you're doing some wonderful work. Tell us about your organization and some of the things that you're doing and how people can get hooked up with you there in the UK and around the world in the last minute that we have.
The last minute is iera, is iera.org.uk. That's iera.org.uk. That's the Dawah organization we set up to train hundreds of thousands of people to take on the challenge and calling the world back to Allah, calling the world back to Allah. If you want to get involved, go to iera.org.uk. We can train you. We're doing research about perceptions about Islam from non-Muslims. You know, in the UK, we've already set up with our partners in IslamNet in Norway. That's islamnet.no. There are partners there in Norway. We're going to be setting up during the Journey of Faith there in Canada as well. And we're going to be setting up all over the world to try and call the world back to Allah, train the people to become Muslim callers, the callers to back to God, which we, you know, that's what we're doing. And the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the Prophet, peace be upon him, spent 23 years engaged in calling the world. He didn't do anything else. If he didn't call the world, he wasn't content. And he didn't leave anyone around him that didn't hear about the message. And we know after 30, 40 years, most of the world, most of the civilized world, they at least had received the message. And this is our duty. This is being a Muslim, is being a caller. And being a caller is being a Muslim. If we can't do that, we're not going to attain to success. And we're never going to feel happy in our hearts. And we know it's an obligation upon every Muslim, anyone who calls himself a Muslim, who loves the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who loves Allah, who loves the people for the sake of God, then he should be calling them.
Absolutely beautiful advice. And that's where they can hook up with you. Brother, may the creator of the heavens and the earth, in Arabic we say Allah, Jesus in Aramaic, he said Allaha. That's the one that we turn to for guidance, and may he reward you for being with us and doing all the wonderful work that you're doing. Jazakallah khair. Peace and blessings be upon you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We hope to see you again soon, live next time on The Dean Show. Take care, my brother. Peace.
Fresh, pure, holy peace. Fresh, pure, holy peace.